This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Childhood obesity is one of our country's more pressing problems. A third of American kids are now considered overweight or obese. And we've known for some time that violence can contribute to those rates of obesity, but we didn't know how. A new study offers some answers. It tracked adolescents in California and North Carolina, and it looked into what happened to other health indicators when participants were exposed to violence. Candace Odgers is one of the study's authors. She's a professor of public policy at Duke University and a professor of psychology at the University of California, Irvine. And she joins me now to talk about those findings. Candace Odgers, welcome to the State of Things.
Thanks for having me.
What did we already know about the connection between violence and obesity?
Well, we knew that kids who grew up in low-income families and neighborhoods experienced greater health problems. And there have been reports that kids who've been maltreated and who have a history of kind of adverse experiences and stressful experiences are more likely to experience problems with weight gain and to be overweight in adolescence. But we don't know exactly how that might happen.
And that was the aim of this study, was to find out some of those answers?
Yeah, so we wanted to know whether on days when kids saw these events or experienced these events, what happened on key indicators that might be related to obesity. So what happened to their eating behavior, their sleep, their exercise?
Tell us how you set this up. It's two parts, really. It's two parts, actually, right?
Yeah, so we do in-person assessments with the kids, and we collect information on their things like BMI, on their psychological history, on their family economic background. And then we track the kids over time in the community using their mobile phones. And so in California, we did this for 30 days, three times a day. In North Carolina, we did this for 2 weeks, three times a day again. And so we get the kids to report on what they're seeing, what they're experiencing in their neighborhoods, their schools, or families, and then also what kind of behaviors they're engaging in that might be related to weight gain, obesity, et cetera.
What about the demographics? The same kind of kids in California as North Carolina?
We started out in California with a high-risk sample. We wanted to understand in communities that have really high levels of violence exposure, what's happening with those kids. And in North Carolina, we wanted to look at a more generalizable population sample. So the sample in North Carolina is actually drawn from across the state as representative of children attending public schools in the state of North Carolina. So it's a broader group of kids.
All right. So tell us what you found in terms of unhealthy eating and drinking among adolescents who were exposed to violence.
Yeah, so one of the things about the study, past research has really compared groups of kids to each other, so kids who experience violence to kids who don't, and they see that the kids in the violence exposure group have more health problems. What we do is we follow kids day over day, and we see on days when kids witness violence, arguing, fighting in their schools, neighborhoods, homes, in the California sample, they're more likely to consume unhealthy food, so more fast food, soda, et cetera. They report fatigue related to sleep, loss of sleep the next day. And interestingly, we found evidence that they were moving more, engaging in more exercise on violence exposure days.
All right, so this is self-reporting. So even the threshold of violence and what qualifies as a violent experience, whether personal or something they witnessed, would be something they're reporting to you, right?
Exactly. It's what the kids define as witnessing violence, as fights, as arguments, et cetera. In the North Carolina sample, what we did to try and address just relying on self-reports is we had the kids wear wearable devices that would track their sleep and their activity so we could get a real-time read on behaviors while they're reporting on their violence exposure.
All right, so let's drill down a little bit. You found that kids who are reporting some exposure to violence are what? They're eating less healthy, or they're taking in more sweets, more soft drinks. Tell us more about in detail what it was they were doing on those times, on those days when they were exposed to violence.
Yeah, so we saw this in the California sample. In North Carolina sample, we didn't find this in the kind of broader sample. The consistent thing across both studies was fatigue related to a lack of sleep. And, you know, sleep in adolescence is important for a whole host of things, not just obesity gains. So it's important for cognition. It's important for mental health. And so the sleep findings were really interesting to us in finding this linkage between experiencing violence or witnessing violence and fatigue related to sleep. I think one of the other things that was really interesting was the soda consumption over time. And so in the California sample, we were able to follow these kids up a year and a half later. And the biggest predictor of both increases in body mass index and increase in the likelihood of becoming overweight or obese with how much soda they consumed as we track them day by day.
And obviously, there's more soda in those kids who were more soda. Kids were consuming more soda the more violence they were exposed to. Is that right?
So actually, soda consumption alone, regardless of whether or not they've been exposed to violence, was the predictor, the key predictor of weight gain. Really, right. So it was this consumption of soda that was the biggest predictor of whether or not kids were gaining weight within this window.
All right. But you did see some link in the behavior, as I understand it, the group in California would tend to consume more of this in the aftermath of a violent episode.
Exactly. On the same day. So on days that they reported being exposed to violence, they were eating more fast food, they were drinking more soda, compared to days when they didn't experience these things. And the key thing is we compare each kid to themselves. So we look at days that they're exposed to violence versus not, versus comparing them to other kids.
Right.
So we kind of hold constant that kid's behaviors and other traits.
So the next big question is, what's going on there? Is the soda somehow a kind of self-medication, or is there something else that correlates to, you know, the fact that they were out in the street a little more often, which may have exposed them to more violence? You really can't kind of tease that out, or can you?
Yeah, so one of the things we looked at is different contexts that it occurs in. So much of the violence that the kids experienced was out in the neighborhoods and the schools, but there was also exposure to violence within the family and within the home. So we find the same type of increase regardless of whether the violence occurs at home, right, where they're witnessing family violence, or whether they're witnessing violence in their community. So we originally thought maybe this is just the fact that they're out more, that they're doing more things, that they're consuming more food, that they're moving more. But we see the same association between exposure to violence and unhealthy food consumption when they see the violence happen in their own homes.
So any guesses about the connection? Why more soda when you're exposed to violence?
Yeah, so one of the theories is that there's a pathway through mental health. So this is a stressful event that's happening and that choices might be different depending on whether or not you're feeling stressed, you're feeling depressed. We also measure the kids' mental health on those days, and we find that they're more likely to be depressed, to be anxious, and we know that that can have some influence on behavior. It's also the case in the homes. When you have a day that's characterized by family violence, this might not be a day where people are being planful. Parents or adults in the home are being planful about the type of food that's available to children.
And again, the more surprising thing to you, or perhaps the more relevant piece of this for you, was the findings regarding sleep. And I guess maybe that might be intuitive for those of us who expect that if you were exposed to some violence, you might have a hard time sleeping that night. Is it as simple as that?
It might be. So it might be kind of a stress-related pathway. It might be that it's a day that the kids are up later, that more things are happening, other events are happening. The idea that there's a reliable association with sleep, though, we think is important, that there's a fatigue related to sleep, because sleep is so crucial to so many things during adolescence.
Biologically, what would be the connection between a lack of sleep and obesity?
Right. So biologically, there's pretty good evidence from a number of other studies, experimental animal studies, that sleep deprivation can lead to different patterns of food consumption. There's also evidence that stress related to violence exposure can lead to different patterns of storing fat and helps to can dysregulate the HPA axis, which is implicated in kind of weight gain. And so there's some biological mechanisms, there's some social mechanisms, and potentially pathways through mental health and disruptions.
Well, the interesting thing about this study, it seems to me, is that it suggests to us that looking at obesity and depression, if these are related, as only a mental health issue, might be limiting some of our strategies going forward, that we need to take into some of these other behavioral things as well.
Yeah, so I think that when we think about children who are exposed to violence or witnessing violence, one of our first reactions is to think about mental health and to kind of treat the mental health implications of violence exposure. But here we're seeing this coupling of violence exposure, mental health, and also behavioral problems that are related to poor health among kids.
What's the next step? Are you going to pursue this study, and is there another step in this line of study?
Yeah, so we're continuing to track the kids in the North Carolina sample. We're very interested in the role of context, for example, where these kids are going to school, where they're living, the role of neighborhood and school factors that might influence health behaviors. So we're continuing to follow these kids through adolescence and get a look at both their daily lives and also the context and the places where they're spending their time and how that might relate to their health.
All right. Well, thank you very much for this update, Candace Odgers. So good to talk with you.
Thank you.
Candace Odgers is a professor of public policy at Duke University and a professor of psychology at the University of California, Irvine. You can find links to her work at our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, untangling the true story of the Civil War in Western North Carolina. We'll talk about it on The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Please stay with us.